experience an unpleasant truth.
America must choose to build a future or obsess about the past. To be a nation of fear, division, and of darkness.
Use your aggressive feeling.
Embrace anger, chaos, and truth, but in the shadow of lies.
Let the hate flow through you.
Together we can choose a different path.
Join me, and together we can rule the galaxy.
Our nation of fear, division, and of darkness.
Break me down with all of your hatred, and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
Embrace anger. Thrive on chaos. But in the shadow of lies.
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
Across the fruited plain and from sea to shining sea. 3 hours of bold truth, excellence, and optimism for America. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Hope you've downloaded our podcast, Wendy Bell Radio, wherever you get your favorite listening stuff. I think you're going to like us. Take us with you wherever you go. Go shopping with us in your AirPods, whatever you got to do. It's nice to take some common sense conservative values along with you because you can feel lonely out there. I agree with you. So I said to you before we went to the commercial break that I do believe even people I dislike, based on what they say, people who I find rude and offensive, I don't want to see them canceled. I don't want them kicked off social media. I don't want them muzzled. I don't want them gagged. Those are the very people we have to have in our public discourse. Because you need to know who you are. I don't want sanitized. I'm not looking for everything to be perfect and not messy. I'm okay being uncomfortable. I'm often uncomfortable. Would it shock you at all to tell you it makes me very uncomfortable every single day to sit here behind a microphone, which is very comfortable to me, but to know that there are not one, but two cameras on me? Very uncomfortable. I've done this for almost 30 years, television in some capacity, video in some capacity. Very uncomfortable. Sometimes you just got to grab it and you got to go with it and be like, all right, everybody's going to see everything. It is what it is. Own it, embrace it, move on. I think access to different voices is pivotal. It's giant. I don't believe that we should have just Democrats and Republicans at these presidential debates. I think you have to have all the third party candidates as well. I remember when we had Joe Jorgensen on the program right before 2020. And she was running as a libertarian for president. And she came on the show and she was outstanding, outstanding. I had no idea what to expect from her. And isn't that what you want in media or in information or in entertainment? I'm going to give you different voices. It's what makes Joe Rogan a 14 and a half million person listen to guy on his podcast. Because he goes all over the place. Famous people, dorky people, scientists, athletes, doesn't matter. Diversity of thought, not homogenized, get in the cattle chute thinking. Jen Psaki said something that was 2 minutes long. And Brock sent it to me in the morning and I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh. There's so much to unpack here. You have to be able to, almost like your sentence structuring, right? Remember, did you guys ever diagram sentences in English class? It's miserable if you're not into like, oh, it's a past participle. Oh, that's a whatever, right? This is what we're going to do with Jen Psaki because it is so preposterous. When you take liberal and you add triggered to it, you get Jen Psaki. She says there's a difference between NBC hiring her straight out of the Biden White House and hiring Ronna McDaniel right from the RNC, namely that Psaki does not lie like Ronna McDaniel. Holy smokes, we thought Chris Cuomo was hypocritical. So let's get to it. In audio soundbite number one, this is just going to blow your mind when she's going to say to you that there's an admission she makes out of the gates. Remember how much they've told us? There's no two-tier system of justice. Merrick Garland said that under oath. He's like, there's not one side for rich and one side for poor, one side for white and one for black. There's not Republican and Democrat. Well, Jen Psaki is saying right now, yeah, there is, in fact. And the system is designed to benefit somebody like Donald Trump. Wait, what? Listen.
And what really struck me about all of this is just how ironic it is that a guy who has railed against a two-tiered system of justice repeatedly has been afforded the kind of leniency that no one else would ever receive.
Leniency. That he has received leniency. Like, how distant from reality do you have to be separated in order to see anything that's been going on with regards to Donald Trump and the political and lawfare persecution of him as being anything other than biased? She's in a whole different dreamscape. But she continues, and this is where she admits, oh yeah, there's not just one tier of justice. It's not blind. There is no more blindfold on Lady Justice, right? It ain't there anymore. It's two tiers. Listen.
I mean, of course there is a two-tier justice system in this country. One in desperate need, by the way, of reform. But it is definitely not tiered in the way that Donald Trump is describing.
Really? Huh. Maybe I've just been wrong. I don't know. Maybe I've just been looking at this all the wrong way, Jen. Maybe I owe her an apology. Well, let's dig into that. Let's unpack that, if you will. In audio soundbite number three, she says Donald Trump plays the victim card. But he's not a victim. He's the beneficiary of this system of two-tier justice. Go.
And he's implying that he is the one who is treated worse. When actually, the opposite is true.
The opposite is true. Donald Trump benefits from all of these lawsuits, all of these indictments, all of his impeachments, all of this stuff. Is that because that's sort of what I'm getting out of her. That's the vibe I'm getting. Of course, we all know that the Democrats' main function, their main election strategy, has nothing to do with Joe Biden running a savvy political campaign. They're trying to defeat Donald Trump with a series of obviously politically motivated and coordinated lawsuits and criminal charges. They hope to drain his resources and tarnish him in your eyes. So yesterday he became, what, a $9 billionaire guy? And his poll numbers in 6 out of 7 swing states are off the freaking charts? How do you reconcile that? Well, she's going to go into some of his cases. Number four.
Just consider that under New York state law, Attorney General Letitia James could have enforced the nearly $500 million judgment against Trump last month. But she didn't. She granted him a 30-day grace period to front the money before the appeals court intervened.
Now, let's skip past the part where there was no crime, there were no victims, and he still got slammed with $500 million in fees from a crazy judge. And Jen thinks that's something that's beneficial for Donald Trump. That is the alternate universe that she's living in. And then she proceeds. Well, not just this case, but remember the judge in the classified documents scandal. That case, you know what? Listen to this.
And I can keep going here, and I will for a little bit. Because in Florida, the Trump-appointed judge overseeing his documents case has shown him such blatant favoritism, she's been rebuked twice by a higher court. She is, surprise, surprise, moving at a snail's pace right now and has yet to even decide when that trial will actually begin.
Now, that's fascinating. Classified documents case. Dragging her feet a little too much. Really? Jen, you seem to be on some kind of a schedule, an agenda. It almost feels like you're trying to slam him and convict him of something desperately before November. Why is that? It's so weird when Joe Biden was just found to have knowingly and willfully taken classified documents for the lion's share of his 50 years in freaking office. I know. That's two tiers of us. I got a little crazy there. She moves on, of course. Anybody else except Joe Biden would have been treated differently, she alleges. Go.
It's also worth noting that anyone else who knowingly and improperly retained classified documents would likely have faced travel restrictions or be forced to surrender their passport or even be put in jail, but not Donald Trump.
Well, Joe Biden's gotten $9 million at a minimum from China, and I'm pretty sure it's up to $30 million if you look at everything we know so far that we're not supposed to talk about. Shh. But you're right. Donald Trump is benefiting from this system. She's really got a point, don't you think? And then she goes on, well, heck, it's not just these lawyers, it's not just these judges who are helping Donald Trump with all of this. It's the Supreme Court. Go.
Likewise, in the election interference case, the Supreme Court hit the pause button so they could take up the absurd argument that a president should be able to do whatever he wants, even assassinate a political rival and be immune from prosecution.
Now, that kind of caught me by surprise. I was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean Donald Trump has alleged that he could go out and kill someone, even kill his political rival, and get away with it by claiming presidential immunity? Is that honestly what he would have said? So we did a little digging. Let's debunk her. We'll fact check Jen Psaki and circle back with you right after this on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. So Jen Psaki just dropped a fact, according to her, that I hadn't heard before. She alleges that Trump has said in the past, or somebody affiliated with him, that he could shoot and kill or kill his political opponent and get away with it if he used his presidential immunity. I was like, wait, what? So we started doing some digging. Brock and I looked back into the Wayback Machine and we started looking at where did that come from? Well, it's a New York Times headline and it was extrapolated from a court hearing where one of Donald Trump's lawyers is talking to a judge who's not affiliated with any of his cases right now, I don't believe. And she's clearly not a fan of Donald Trump. And the judge is trying to get this lawyer to say that, do you believe if Donald Trump asked SEAL Team 6 to go out and kill his political opponent, his enemy, on the campaign trail or otherwise, that he would be immune from prosecution because of this immunity defense as president? She tries to shoehorn this lawyer into saying that. The lawyer says exactly the opposite of that. And I want you to hear, it's odd, but with the context, I think it'll make sense. Go.
Could a president order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? That's an official act in order to SEAL Team 6?
He would have to be and would speedily be, you know, impeached and convicted before the criminal prosecution.
What if he weren't? There would be no criminal prosecution, no criminal liability for that?
Chief Justice's opinion in Marbury against Madison and our Constitutional Tradition and the plain language of the impeachment judgment clause all clearly presuppose that what the founders were concerned about was not.
I asked you a yes or no question. Could a president who ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival who was not impeached, would he be subject to criminal prosecution?
If he were impeached and convicted first. And so
your answer is.
My answer is qualified yes.
I mean, we all,
you know what? I don't even need to hear this. I don't even need to hear them chat about it. She's trying to get him in an aha moment. And he's saying at the letter of the law and what the founding fathers had intended with this and that. No, Donald Trump or any president couldn't go out and order his military to go knock off somebody and then say he is immune from prosecution because he's president. And Jen Psaki and the New York Times, of course, who lied about it and put out a false headline. Jen Psaki ran with that. That's not news. That's dangerous. That's propaganda that is feeding your base this idea that Donald Trump is unhinged. He's deranged. He's unstable. We can't rely on that kind of a personality to be in charge of the nuclear codes. Right? Do you see the pattern? When you listen to it, when you do a little digging and you're like, wait a minute, what? What did she just say? When you push pause on it, you hear the lies that they don't even try to hide. And she's not done yet. She's got two other things. She's going to take a jab at all of the January 6th defendants. And I know a lot of you guys listen to this program from prison. And I hope you're well. I'm glad that you do. She says, Jen Psaki says, she's going to go along and parrot the same thing that Rachel Maddow and Nicole Wallace have already told us today. You are just the minions. You are blind and you do whatever Donald Trump says. Listen.
For Trump in that case is delayed indefinitely. Hundreds of his supporters, the people who listen to his lies, have faced prison sentences. Hundreds of them. But again, not Donald Trump.
Donald Trump wasn't charged with insurrection. If they could have charged Donald Trump and destroyed Donald Trump with that, they would have, Jen. And for you to use January 6th defendants as pawns in your sordid, lackluster effort to be a TV star isn't working. Because we're listening to what you are saying. And we know you are not telling the truth. And finally, she says this. This wraps up her allegation that, yes, of course we have two tiers of justice. And there's one that really benefits Donald Trump more than anybody else. Here's the bow of Psaki.
And back in New York, yes, a trial date was circled on the calendar in the election interference hush money case today. That's a big deal. And the judge actually scolded the Trump team and strongly rejected their arguments to delay. But we were supposed to be covering the start of that trial today, and we are not. So no, Trump is not the victim of a two-tiered system of justice in this country. He's been a beneficiary.
Wow.
There is one system for the powerful, wealthy, and well-connected like Donald Trump, and there is an entirely other system for everyone else.
Hmm. Joe Biden seems to have quite a network surrounding him, doesn't he? Do you hear it now? See, if we were to play all of that for you, it was just about 2 minutes. You would have heard part of it. You would have taken something out of it and been like, that woman is a nutcase. But when you break it down, when you actually hear what people are saying, you get to decide. When we come back, this progressive charade has officially crumbled, my friends. Even political leftists cannot defend the political persecution of Donald Trump. And I have proof of that for you, and it's worth waiting for. Do not go anywhere. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio program. So the progressive charade, my friends, is fracturing. You can see the fissures all over the place, the scramble to pretend that what they've tried to accomplish to destroy this mission of ours, which is very basic, which is to prevent the destruction of the country that we love, because we are on a fast track to that. They know that we know. And that's good. I want to read something to you. It's one of the better articles that I have seen regarding the political persecution of Donald Trump and all of this ridiculosity. I hope you've never been involved in a lawsuit. I have. And it's dirty. It's dirty. It makes you feel dirty. It's awful. I can't imagine how many times Trump has been dragged through the mud. But this $454 million monstrosity, it's a billboard flashing to the world that America has lost its ever-loving mind. And the people who went to protect us, who went there to guard us, the Oath Keepers. Those people were thrown away and put into prison. Because that's how much this political machine needs you to be asleep. But you're not. This article from The Federalist, it's a good article. Headline, New York's fraud judgment against Trump is so bad, even his biggest critics aren't defending it. And this works very well. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this gentleman. I'm really not, though I know he says a lot of stuff online that makes me want to throat punch him. His name is Brian Krakenstein. I think that's his name. Brian Krakenstein. He's online. He's a leftist. He's a political commentator, right?
He's paid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is, for sure. But he put something out that I thought was unusual. Even he was talking about this Ron and McDaniel MSNBC debacle, where it's clear that MSNBC is not interested in free speech. MSNBC is interested in one thing, and that's conning you into believing the globalist propaganda. Even this guy, Brian Krakenstein, Stein, whatever, he writes this. While I understand the outcry among those who would have been her colleagues, I also feel that nothing gets accomplished if we start canceling those we disagree with. Why would you want to cancel a Ronna McDaniel before you even hear what she has to say? Let her sink or swim on her own. Let people decide. Do what Jim Jordan said when he was sitting down and talking to Leslie Stahl. Talking about 2020, present the evidence. Allow people to decide for themselves. We've got this God-given gift. It's called common sense. Some people use it more than others, admittedly. But let people decide. Even Brian Krakenstein is saying that. It's better to listen to her and push back with facts in front of the public. Is it better to do that or to push her to the corners of the media where echo chambers persist? That is the true question here. And that's an interesting jumping off point for this article on The Federalist. It's pretty clear, and the gentleman who's writing this is Mark Hemingway. It's pretty clear at this point the Democrats' main election strategy against Donald Trump has nothing to do with Joe Biden running a savvy political campaign. Instead, they are attempting to defeat Trump with a series of obviously politically coordinated lawsuits and criminal charges, hoping that this will both drain Trump's resources and any resulting convictions would tarnish him in the eyes of voters. Suffice it to say, the strategy isn't working out for them. Biden has not led in the polls in 6 months. They are not getting the phone call from Bud Light. You've got to pivot. You've got to do something else. They've got nothing else. This is it. This is their last game. While there's a lot to be said about the dubious nature of the charges being brought against him, the point has been driven home by the recent decision by a New York appeals court to reduce Trump's bond in a civil fraud trial from $454 million to $175 million. Or rather, the issue is what nobody is saying about this case. It's such complete garbage that no one among the legion of Trump's critics in and out of corporate media is even trying to defend this case on its merits. And this is what's important for us to remember about this case. For which a judge thought $454 million was a reasonable penalty. This is to recap what it was all about. Trump took out loans over several years, as real estate moguls do, for him to get approved for those loans. The banks did their own due diligence about Trump's finances and his ability to pay back the loans. They decided to give the loans to him. Trump paid them back, and everybody made money. However, the state of New York, where the current Attorney General Letitia James campaigned for office on the insane premise of convicting Trump without even saying what he was guilty of, combed through the paperwork of these loans and charged Trump with fraudulently inflating the value of his assets to get favorable loan terms. They did this in spite of the fact no bank has accused Trump of wrongdoing. There is no victim. Nobody was injured. That's not good enough for these people. The case was decided by a judge who is personally bizarre, true, and professionally incompetent and adversarial. In a case where Trump was accused of inflating the value of his assets, in Judge Engoron's ruling, he concluded that Mar-a-Lago, Trump's historic estate on 17 oceanfront acres in the heart of the most exclusive neighborhood in America, was worth between $18 and $27.6 million. I mean, even CNN was incredulous about Engoron's low valuation of Trump's assets. Real estate insiders question how Trump fraud judge valued Mar-a-Lago was one of the headlines. For those who believe that Trump inflated the value of his assets to get a loan, this would not exactly make him a unique figure in the business world. Engoron's judgment is still unreliable. The ruling against Trump is, in the words of the former federal prosecutor, Andrew McCarthy, a fraud case in which there are no fraud victims. McCarthy's National Review colleague, Dan McLaughlin, who has decades of experience litigating businesses, says the idea that Trump has caused $500 million in damages to his lenders doesn't pass the straight face test. It is so obviously politically motivated. Everybody is seeing it, even the people who don't like Donald Trump. But I want you to hear this. Judge Jeanine Pirro, I don't like her. She drives me nutty. But she summarized the triggered hatred of the progressives, how this backfired, which is why I say to you, the progressive charade of progress has fractured. Nobody's buying it anymore. Here's the judge.
This whole thing is born of the hatred and the contempt of the left. Okay, the progressive lefts. The man was literally thrown off of Twitter. He was forced to start his own social network, and he did. And you know what? The Dems deserve it. The sad part about this whole thing is that the Democrats have literally made him richer. They've made him more powerful. And the Democrats, through their hatred, are going to make him president of the United States. They are incapable of looking at themselves in the mirror and say, I hate this man. I unfriended all my friends and family in 2016 when he was elected. Because who did Donald Trump kill? I mean, what is the problem? The man has signed the front of checks for his whole career, and now all of a sudden, what did he build? What didn't he build? Hasn't he done?
I agree. 100%. So there is that critical moment where a lot of people out there are going to have to stop, and they're going to have to look in the mirror. Because it's not going to pass the smell test anymore. They're not going to be conned anymore. It's the way I felt on Palm Sunday in 2020. When Brock and I were in our radio studio before I got us fired, because I said I was on the fence. I was on the fence about all of it. I was on the fence about the virus. I was on the fence about the vaccine. I was on the fence about the lockdowns, about the logic, about putting sand, filling in the skate parks in my community with sand, and taking the swings off the swing sets outside and removing the basketball hoops. It didn't make sense. We watched a couple, clearly married, walking their dogs through an empty parking lot on Palm Sunday, holding hands the way couples do. And they were both wearing masks. Now, my wake up, my on-the-fence moment where I was forced to look in the mirror and be like, what am I willing to believe? What am I willing to see? Who am I willing to hear? That might have happened 4 years ago, but this progressive faction of society realizes more and more people are stepping in front of the mirror. And they're drinking it in. Quick time out on the Wendy Bell Radio program, because you know what happens on Wednesdays. It's like the best part of the day. It's Lib of the Week, and it's a doozy next. So, Lib of the Week is something that we cherish. Hump Day equals you get a little something-something. We give you some sugar with that, all right? So, we love the Libs of TikTok. We think that the woman behind it is a savvy truth-teller. And she made a brand that triggered the likes of Washington Post hack reporter Taylor Lorenz and others simply by trolling leftists in their natural habitat, because they put out videos of themselves saying ridiculous things and being dangerous. And she put them on a TikTok page, Libs of TikTok. Well, it's not TikTok. It's really Twitter, isn't it? Is it TikTok?
It's TikTok, but...
But it's on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah. Anyway, so... We get a lot of content from her. This particular one is, you know, again, we don't find joy in this. It's interesting to pay attention to who is listening to the Rachel Maddows and the Jen Psakis and the Chris Cuomos and all of them, because it's these kind of people. What you're about to hear is a transgender preschool teacher who says, I will tell you, I don't know he, she. I'm going to go with she. I don't care if I misgender them. I don't. It's teach our kids. Don't be weird. But she, he says that she's super happy to be able to talk to her preschoolers about all sorts of stuff she ought not be talking to preschoolers about. So without further ado...
Time now for the Wendy Bell Radio Program's...
Oh, love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal.
Liberal of the Week.
Here you go. I hope this person is not a school teacher where you are. Go.
If you want to know what it's like to be trans and work with children but not pass as the gender you identify with, let me tell you. I work with preschool age children, about 3 to 4 years old. I guess my boss sent out an email to like the staff and the parents of my room, letting them know that I'm trans and like what pronouns I identify with and stuff. My coworker is great. She has never misgendered me. And when I'm in different rooms, some of the kids will ask me like, are you a boy or a girl? Because my hair is kind of like a mid-length, but it's short enough that it applies to the kids' logic of like boys have short hair and girls have long hair kind of thing. On my first day in the room, one of the kids asked me how I'm a boy if I have this thing. Then she pointed at like her nose where my piercing is. I've actually had kids correct other kids on my pronouns, saying that he's not a she, he's a boy, and like correct other kids. It's so cute. I've seen parents correct their kids too. The other day I was leaving work at the same time as one of the kids, and she was talking about me to her mom, and she was like, yeah, like, no, but she doesn't, whatever, whatever. And then the mom was like, yeah, like, he doesn't do whatever, whatever, and, like, kept talking. And I was like, that's just so nice. No one's made it, like, an issue. They're still, like, having these conversations, which is literally the sweetest thing ever. Like, on one of my, like, first days, one of the parents dropped off her daughter, and she asked me if her daughter had called me a girl the day before, because apparently, I guess, she had told her mom that. And I was like, no, they just call me my name, because we're usually talking to each other. And she was like, I'm sorry if she called you a girl. We have a lot of books at home. And I was like, that's so nice. Like, she didn't have to, but she did. I've just had such a great experience. And
what is going on in this world? We have a lot of people who needed more hugs. Some. Maybe they needed just to be listened to, like I started the program today. But this isn't the way to get attention. It's such a waste. It's so antithetical to what we are. Like, I don't want somebody to talk about my sexuality. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable with being a teacher and having the school put out to the parents of the students. Well, Wendy is a blankety blank, just so everybody knows. How about we just focus on the kids? There's this weird thing called education. That should be the focus, which is why our students are falling farther and farther behind, because she, whatever the hell. Super jazzed, everybody's abuzz talking about that, right? Now, in the world of weird, that is definitely on the list. But how about this? Did you guys know that the Anti-Defamation League, it's one of those acronyms that really just means suck. The ADL is claiming that 100%, 100 and then the percent sign, 100% is racist. And it's a white supremacist thing. Beyond, this is beyond logic, of course, because it is illogical. So the definition now, according to the Anti-Defamation League, of 100%, shorthand for 100% white. 100% is a term used by white supremacists. This is like showing your work in math is racist. This is like the nuclear family, marriage between whatever, man and woman. That is the white supremacist view of the world. Marriage, racist. Having a two-parent front with children, that's racist. It's exhausting. It's exhausting, and we're beaten up by it. I'm done. I'm tired. I just want good gas prices, right? I just want to buy bok choy that's not $8 a pound. Very basic. I want to know that my kids are getting a good education in school, that their teachers aren't talking to them about stuff that they shouldn't. I want to know that the people in my neighborhood aren't newcomers. They're not people who've come from God knows where all over the world, people who we don't know, we know nothing about. I want to know that my government isn't about to unleash another emergency on us so that we're afraid. We're told to be afraid to stay home for the next election. I'm very basic. I don't need this. You don't need this. Like I said yesterday, I got off the hamster wheel. It's getting us nowhere fast, ladies and gentlemen. So next time you do that, you know, A-OK with your, isn't that also, that's derogatory, that's white supremacy too. 100%, just so you know, if you ever say that, now, according to these people, means 100% white. Hey, you've been warned. Love having you here, guys. I hope you come on back tomorrow. 21 hours and counting, and I'm already excited. I'll see you then. Peace.